from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a program about stuff you may have missed, either on this broadcast or out in the real world. Starting with this, here's something you missed. Her friends and family gathered in a tidy kitchen, the aroma of baked brownies in the air, a steaming pot sitting on a stove for Sunday dinner, and the matriarch herself laid out in a personalized casket right there in a replica of her beloved kitchen. This is Big Mama's Kitchen, the cutting edge of a national trend of personalizing funerals and viewings, and the talk of the 65th annual gathering of the National Funeral Directors and Morticians Association in Atlantic City, New Jersey. You missed that? Me too. In St. Louis, where Big Mama's Kitchen is one of three permanent theater-like sets at the Wade Funeral Home, mourners have been known to delay a loved one's funeral to get their turn in the kitchen. Or if the situation warrants, you can have Dad laid out near a Lazy Boy lounger, television, remote control, and faux cigar in the ashtray. The movie buff gets popcorn. For the outdoors type, there is the option of a barbecue pit and grill complete with special effects. We actually put dry ice in the bottom of the barbecue pit so it would be smoking when you lifted the cover, says Deborah Kellum, Director of Operations of Perpetua Incorporated, which owns three funeral homes in St. Louis, Chicago, and New York, and has pioneered the themed vignettes. The funeral staff brought along barbecue fare. We kept making it, Kellum says, so he'd have the aroma. I think she means the aroma of barbecue. Funeral directors and casket makers, we don't call them coffins in this country, do we? Say the personalized funeral appeals to mourners by turning the visitation and funerals into a celebration of life and its treasured rituals, such as Sunday dinner and watching TV, apparently by the couch potato guy. They have developed personalized cap panels for the inside cover of a casket slash coffin. The material can be embroidered or silkscreened with a picture. They're promoting the memory safe, a locked drawer under the casket cover that can be filled with memorabilia from golf balls, tees, and scorecards to personal notes. That's what families want, says Ken Camp, president of the Batesville Casket Company. It's no longer all solemnity and somberness. You find a range of emotion. There's laughter and celebration. Research has shown that's the first step in the healing process, says Joseph Cutchins, Jr., president of the National Funeral Directors and Morticians Association. It's becoming more and more of a trend and vogue. Not just a trend and vogue. At the convention, not everyone was effusive about laying a loved one out in what amounts to a faux backdrop. The kitchen is a little much, says Nan Welch, a funeral director from West Philadelphia. But Kellum, that is to say, Deborah Kellum, Director of Operations at Perpetua Incorporated, says about half of the 270 funerals at the Wade Funeral Home this year had included a themed viewing. About the only negative comments, she says, have come from ministers. Quote, they're just scared we're going to bring our sets to the church. Unquote. Show business is where you find it, ladies and gentlemen, and I find it everywhere. Don't you? Hello, welcome to the show.
She acts sort of teenage, just in between age, looks about 4'3". Although she's just small fry, just about so high, Gidget is the one for me. A regular tomboy, but dressed for a prom, boy, how cute can one girl be? Although she's not king size, her finger is ring size, Gidget is the one for me. If she says she loves you, you can bet your boots she loves you. If she says she hates you, that can also mean she loves you. It very well may be she's just a baby speaking romantically. If that's a bad feature, I'll be the teacher. The Gidget is the one for me. We'll be right back. She's not much on glamour, and she should improve her grammar. Still I sigh and stammer, and my heart beats like a little old hammer. Strictly from Dixie, face like a pixie, shorter than girls should be. The rest of the shipment, standard equipment, just a doll in dungaree. The Gidget is the one for me.
Obligatory disclaimer, this program is recorded far in advance. Don't blame me if I mention anybody who's died in the meantime. Hello from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the show. Things you may have missed. A convenient catch-all category for stuff, don't you think? No answer really required. Ladies and gentlemen, a little while ago, it was mentioned on this broadcast that Rupert Murdoch was being sued by Vivendi Universal. Now, the irony implicit in this was that Peter Chernin, the number one guy of Rupert's at News Corporation, had just recently delivered a speech about the worldwide danger of hacking and piracy and associated phenomena, and the danger it posed to all legitimate copyright owners. The suit by Vivendi charged that it was what was the amount of the suit? Like $1 billion? Why am I asking you? I have it right here. Look at it. It's right here. I think it was like $1 billion. Yeah, 1 billion euros. No? 1.1 billion dollars in damages. Sorry. There it is. This was in March. The reason for the lawsuit, that a News Corporation owned company, NDS, had hacked smart cards used for a pay TV service in Italy owned by Canal Plus, and then conspired to give the secret of the smart cards away on a website. At one point, according to Canal Plus, 3 million people in Italy were pirating the signal. That was some 75% of the people actually watching that pay TV service. Canal Plus said it lost at least $1 billion in viewer subscriptions. And then sued News Corp for $1 billion. Now, mere months later, News Corp has bought the Italian pay TV service from Canal Plus for about $1 billion. This would make Rupert Murdoch Italy's sole pay TV operator. He has a good relationship with the current premier and media baron Silvio Berlusconi, so odds are Italian authorities will approve the move, although they have been worried in the past about giving Rupert monopoly power over Italian pay TV. Oh, and incidentally, the British pay TV provider, ITV Digital, went out of business after the same company, Rupert Murdoch's owned NDS, admitted they helped post that they posted card hacking piracy information on a website they financially support. So, interesting way of doing business. Not surprising, just interesting. But anyway, Rupert, in the meantime, of course, Jean-Claude Messier, Jean-Marie Messier, the man who built Vivendi Universal, has been forced out. So Rupert has made up, in a way, with Vivendi after perhaps helping to force out Jean-Marie Messier. So here is a show that not only you didn't miss, you'll never get to see.
The first time borderline celebrities climbed into the ring to mix it up, it was fun. This time, it's personal. Jean doesn't like Rupert.
I see his ugly Australian face in the ring. I touch it like an overripe honeydew, except he's already scattered his seeds.
Rupert can't stand Jean.
Oh, he's a kind of French pipsqueak that like collaborating with the Nazis. I may not load my gloves with metal studs when I face this mime of a mogul, but I just might.
Celebrity boxing just got a whole lot richer and meaner. Fox presents a night of pugilism that would make Mike Tyson blush. Because for one night only, it's three rounds. No headgear and no refs. Rupert Murdoch.
I'd love it if they carried him out in Ziploc pouches.
Jean Messier.
I'd make him wish that he did have a union health plan.
Plus, an exciting undercard featuring Ken Lay versus the head of Arthur Anderson. Lawsuits, they're for sissies. For the rest of us, there's executive celebrity boxing. Because you can never be too young or too fox.
And a brief tale of airport security. If you haven't missed this, I'm just doing it now. I recently flew out of Carlsbad, a small commuter airport north of San Diego. Since the planes carry only a few passengers, it seems they have the dubious luxury of wanding all the boarding passengers on the way through security. Because I forgot my car keys in my pocket as I went through the metal detector, I was singled out for special treatment. My shoes, loafers, belt, and wristwatch all had to go through the X-ray. While being wanded, the detector kept going off as it passed my right leg. The gate agent asked if I wore a brace. I don't. The guard patted me down and could find nothing. I was wanted again. It went off again. I looked behind me and realized I was standing within 6 inches of a metal chair leg. I stepped forward 6 inches and was wanded clean. Tales of airport security, ladies and gentlemen. I don't bother to copyright it. But speaking of executive meetings that you may have missed, this one also putatively took place last March, just after Ted Koppel had written an op-ed piece in the New York Times demanding that his bosses at ABC and by extension at the Walt Disney Company, which owns ABC, give Nightline the respect of a long-term commitment to erase the stigma of the fact that ABC had been pursuing David Letterman and had, in the process, an ABC executive had called Nightline irrelevant. Following the publication of that piece, you may have missed the meeting that may have occurred.
Ted, you'll see you now.
Thanks. Thanks very much, Goofy.
That's okay. It's my job.
Well, good morning, sir.
Ted, sit down. Don't stand there like a statue judging me.
Well, thank you, Mr. Miles, I wasn't judging you, far from it. I think, if anything, you've been judging me and my broadcast.
Okay, first, let's get things straight. There are no broadcasts. Everything, if we work it right, everything is on broadcast TV, cable TV, DVD. I mean, the only thing we don't repurpose 8 Ways to Sunrise is the surveillance videos of you taking a crap.
Well,
you get my drift here, newsboy? No broadcasts. All there is are shows. Some shows are in a theme park with minimum wage kids wearing big heads. Some shows are on sets in Washington where the anchor is paid more money than Minnie on maternity leave. And he's got big hair. But they're all shows.
All right, sir. Well, I guess we're here to talk about my memo. I wasn't intending to try to threaten this company.
Oh, please, Theodore. Don't try to peddle mouse crap to the mouse. I've been around Goofy Drive a couple of times. Of course you were trying to threaten us. You guys couldn't continue to work unless you had the assurance of a long-term commitment to your show.
Well, I was being metaphorical.
Look. You're being paid more money than the entire cast of The Lion King.
Well,
now get serious. You'll put out that show and do it with commitment and energy if I don't give you any reason to believe it's going to be on the air past Bill Maher's pimp's birthday.
All right. Look, Mr. Mouse.
Call me Mickey. When you say mouse, I don't know. Maybe it's me, but I detect an attitude there as if, I'm the king of TV journalism and I have to report to a frigging rodent. Well, guess what, Murrow Man? You do. It is a small world, after all.
All right, Mickey. Let me be absolutely straight with you. We've done excellent shows for you for more than 2 decades.
Only because nobody on the cartoon floor of the building gave a flying frog. You know, every once in a while, Donald would squawk about the animation of his whole daytime show on the Disney Channel being cheaper than the opening graphic of your show. But,
well, for whatever reason, we got viewers. We made money for this network.
You made money when this place was owned by the Cap Cities people. The Goyim! The humans!
Well, all the same, as broadcasters, they did have a dedication to the importance of news and public service.
Mm-hmm.
And, to be truthful, I've never sensed that dedication since...
Since we took over?
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, the pursuit of David Letterman while denigrating the value of our show...
See, now you're saying it. And you're not even wincing.
That pursuit, coupled with branding our program as irrelevant...
Hey, Ted! That's the silliest thing of all. You got your panties all in a bunch when we called you irrelevant.
Yeah.
What did you think? That's a put-down? Please, my friend, around here, irrelevant is the best thing you can be. You think we got all those schmoes walking down Main Street thinking, oh boy, this is going to be relevant?
Well, sir, it all contributed to a sense that, and pardon me for saying this, Mickey,
mm-hmm.
that you don't really care about news.
Ted, I'm at a level with you, mouse to man.
All right.
You can ask Minnie what's the first thing I do in the morning.
Well, I'm sure you order up a cheese plate of some kind.
Before that, I read the papers, Ted. Look, you feel like you're lacking support? Here's what I got on my plate, okay? Besides cheese. Huey, Dewey, and Louie all just got the same agent. I'm going to wind up paying three times as much for three frigging afterthought ducks. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, Sarah. I think I do.
You're just lucky you weren't pulling this scam when Walt was around. He'd have ended up doing the Secret Life of Walruses so fast your hair would be spinning.
Mr. Mouse, I don't want to seem as if I've come here empty-handed.
Mm-hmm.
If there's anything we could do to develop the Nightline brand for rides or park attractions.
Oh, sure. The Rwanda famine could work real well. Kind of like a model cafe, only more depressing. Ted, please, get out of my sight before I puke all over my gloves.
Well, sir, I am grateful for this time, and as I said in my New York Times op-ed piece, I am not unmindful of the nature of the bargain I've entered into. I just...
Ted, you like news? Here's a flash. From our point of view, it's no bargain. And no, we don't validate.
All right, sir. Thank you.
You think you have it tough? Not a day goes by when the boss doesn't make Donald feel like Daffy is the funnier duck.
All right, Goofy. Thank you for that much-needed perspective.
That's what they don't pay me for.
He came alone.
now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for me to read the trades for you. By the way, in case you're wondering, I read from Advertising Age a lot because that's what we're surrounded by. But also because I get that trade. They send it to me. You could send me interesting trades from your trade, and I'd read those trades too. Le Show, 1900 Pico Boulevard, PICO, Santa Monica, California, 90405. But now let me read this trade for you from Advertising Age. Talking audio ads run at gas stations. I'll read it for you. Oh, boy. Just when it appears we've run out of places to put ads, along come talking gasoline pumps. Several major advertisers signed up for a two-month test program at United Kingdom gas stations. Hey, that's where I am right now. Which featured talking gas pump nozzles. Mercedes-Benz, Nestle's Kit Kat Bar, and Dalton's Weekly Travel Magazine are paying roughly $157 each per month to have their 15-second audio spots broadcast through the nozzles at 13 high-traffic gas stations. All the advertisers' messages run during a 2 to 3 minute cycle, which includes trivia questions and sports information. See, it's a service. There's no other way for the oil companies to greet their customers daily, says Chip Rimmer. Oh, a name I wish I'd written, and I didn't. Chip Rimmer, marketing director of DirectCast Network, the Midland, Michigan marketer of the fueling talker. I got to get out of the business. They're writing so much better than I am. Chip Rimmer, talking about the fueling talker. Mr. Rimmer wants fueling talkers to be talking at 1,000 UK stations by the end of the year. The pumps have a limited exposure in the U.S. with local advertisers at 100 gas stations, mostly in Michigan. They expect to launch in Orlando and Las Vegas this fall. I won't scare the gamblers. It's an intrusive medium, but it's elective as well, says Chip Rimmer. Pumpers can opt out by turning off the volume on the nozzle, which also has a counter to measure consumers who activate it. From an advertising point of view, that's total accountability. Don't you have to get your hands kind of smelly to do that, Chip? Mr. Rimmer? He's not answering me. Mr. Rimmer has inked deals with petrol purveyors, it says here. That means people who sell gasoline. Which also have 15-second messages about their own offerings on the fueling talker. They include ExxonMobil, Kuwait Petroleum's Q8 chain. That's cute. That's very clever. Snacks 24 and Supermarket. Snacks 24 gas retailers told Mr. Rimmer they have seen a jump in sales of the fresh pastries they sell since their fueling talker ad started in early July. If it works, it works, you know? Mercedes smart car spot from some ad agency or other touts that it takes just $15 worth of fuel to fill up versus more for an average car. Marketers keep trying new ways to reach elusive consumers. A year ago, a gas pump video ad network called Video Venue bowed in the United States at several hundred Casey's General stores with ads from major advertisers. And, of course, last month we told you about Bank of America running ads on its automated tellers. Ladies and gentlemen, the hits just keep on coming when I read the trades for you. It's a copyrighted feature. No, it's not. This is Le Show, and apropos of disputes that have been resolved, who's playing out, you may have missed, Woody Allen sued his former friend and producer, Gene Dumanian, earlier this year, over receipts from the 7 movies they produced together. Under the Sweetland Films banner, Woody claimed that Gene and her partner, Jackie Safra, an international investment type, had cheated him, Woody, out of a lot of the proceeds. Gene and Jackie demurred. And Gene was, you may recall, crying in court when Woody testified. Woody had testified, among other things, that he thought the whole idea of a lawsuit would be kind of fun, that they'd be friends at night and go to Elaine's and have dinner at night and then go to court during the day. And it'd be all very Tracy Hepburn. It didn't turn out that way, although they ended up settling shortly after his testimony. But that was maybe too late.
Fade up on wide shot courtroom. Stoney's voiceover. I was on trial. I mean, Himmler, the minute the war is over, he goes right back to making millions off Bayer aspirin or BMWs or something. But I'm on trial in my very own city. Actually, Janice and I were both on trial. We'd sued each other. Me, who could never sue a fly. Now, suddenly, with the Knicks in the toilet and the Rangers playing golf, I was on the stand. Close up on Stoney Kepler. Voiceover continues. Not that I was doing such a bad job. I mean, one thing even my severest critics agree on. I'm a superb witness. I mean, but between my command of details, my wit, and my advancing vulnerability, I could be more devastating on the stand than Lizzie Grubman on an IV drip of sodium pentothal. But
Mr. Allen?
Yes, Your Honor.
The opposing counsel asked you a question. You're responding with some kind of strange monologue.
Too self-deprecating, you think?
Because just answer the question, please.
I know, but I'm a creative person. I answer creatively. The head has its reasons.
Go ahead, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Allen, did you agree to extend your contract with my clients past the first 3 movies?
That's absurd. Yeah, I mean, that's beyond Samuel Beckett. It's so absurd. I mean, it's beyond Ionesco. It's pure Dario Fo. I mean, I could never conceive of doing such a thing.
This isn't your signature on a contract extension dated May 25th, 1995.
It's, I'll tell you the truth. I think I may need laser eye surgery or something. I mean, I forget about those documents or whatever you're holding. I can barely make out your figure.
Mr. Allen, please to tell the court, would you possibly be sexually interested in me?
Me? I mean, please, you're a smart, attractive girl in your mid-20s. I'm a tall, dashing boy in my early 30s. What could we possibly have in common?
Your Honor, request a 15-minute recess to confer with my client.
So ordered.
Shot. We move through the front door of Le Cirque, past a guy in a tuxedo who swears he was with the resistance during the war. I settle on a banquette in the front of the room, where we discover Stoney and Janice picking at the amuse-bouche. Janice was the sort of compulsively elegant and mysterious woman who always dressed as if she was on her way to Halston's funeral.
Well, thank you for at least calling me elegant.
Only in the stage directions.
Look, I just don't think it's any of your business.
I just want to know what you guys conferred about doing the recess. I mean, what's wrong with that?
It's privileged. We're in a trial. Macy's doesn't tell gimbals.
Are you kidding? There hasn't been a gimbal since Giuliani was wiretapping John Gotti's schnauzer. Besides, look at us. We're just like we imagined. Tracy and Hepburn meet Court TV.
We are not. There's nothing cute about this. You're accusing Jackie and me of grand theft.
Look, we're friends. I mean, let's put the best face on it. Let's just say I'm accusing you of baby grand theft. Besides, what kind of a name is Jackie Safra? I mean, with a Q. That's not a producer. That's a stripper who works near Ben Gurion Airport.
Woody, this is stupid. The only reason I'm having dinner with you is because my attorney and I agreed that this was the only way to keep you from having dinner with her.
Good evening. May I take your order? Maybe start with a nice pike?
Rabbi Kitzler? Mm-hmm. What would I want with a bicycle at this time of night?
He said pike, Woody. Pike.
Mm. The chef made with the truffles on it. But look, you two, before I take your order, can I sit down with you and knock your heads together?
You see, Rabbi, I didn't make the reservation for three. I'd hate to lose this table. It's...
So, look, you two. Jean.
She's Janice in the film, and we pan to Janice as she sits fuming.
Woody, we're not making a movie.
Well, don't tell me. Tell the crew. They're out shooting exteriors.
Jean, you get something out of this arrangement. You get to write off fine cars and trips against the budgets of the films.
Well, there were a few times when we may have exceeded the bounds of fungibility.
And Woody, you get to make movies and cast younger and younger women as your love interests.
I'm just not good at writing parts for actresses over 25 anymore. I admit it.
Don't you two see that you have more to lose than to gain by continuing this silly lawsuit? For it is Rabbi Akiva observed in his commentaries on Reb Ben Eliezer the Wiser, a dispute which engulfs both participants cannot but ensnare them in moral quicksand, for the complainant and the complained against both have in common this...
I can't believe it, Gene. I cannot find one rabbi in all of Manhattan who goes against type.
God himself.
Maybe it's my fault for not thinking outside the phylactery.
Look, this is inappropriate. Tracy and Hepburn never submitted to binding arbitration by a religious cleric.
Well, you didn't see the director's cut of Adam's Rib, obviously. There was a pedophile priest who brought them together in the last scene. You know what? Maybe after dinner, when the rabbi's finished, you could come over to my place, bring your attorney. I don't know, watch some of my beta tapes of the 72 Knicks.
I am not bringing over my attorney. She's young enough to be your other stepdaughter.
But that's just it. I mean, I thought she could be a friend for Sun Yi.
Woody, you know what we were doing during recess today? Staying in the ladies' room laughing at you.
That's the good kind of staying in the ladies' room and laughing at me, though, right?
Maybe we should just order.
Okay, but one suggestion? That's treat, you know, because... Exterior night. Stoney walking down the block to his apartment building. Wider shot. Stoney's limousine trailing him down the street, just in case. Stoney's voiceover. Maybe I should have waited until the trial is over to be writing this. But I never forgot what Eli Zabar once told me. Stories are like brisket. Better fresh.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is a whole bunch of things I know you've missed because they've already happened. Unless you were in Memphis this past week, you missed these. It was all the celebrations leading up to the 25th anniversary of the death of Elvis Presley. For example, ElvisCon 2002, the ninth annual convention featuring more than 60 tables of Elvis memorabilia. Dealers from around the world selling, trading, and buying all kinds of vintage and new Elvis collectibles. Elvis Presley record price guide author and columnist Jerry Osborne, along with other guests on hand, to meet with Elvis fans and collectors. The Elvis Legacy and Light Laser Show. Tom, you want to try that?
Legacy and Light Laser Show? No thanks.
Thank you, Tom. It features Elvis's career milestone songs. Laser show not recommended for children 6 and younger due to sound level. The Elvis Fan Club Festival. The conference room of the Graceland Inn, formerly the Econo Lodge. Various Elvis fan club tables with memorabilia raffles. Raffles, not the clown. Actual raffles. Continuous Elvis videos. Vegas atmosphere with Vegas items. Maybe some talking gasoline pumps, nozzles, if it's Vegas atmosphere. EPE items. It's charity, so won't make fun of that. George Klein's Elvis Mafia Reunion, a gathering of people close to Elvis who reminisce, answer questions. $30. Meet with those people. The RCA Gold and Platinum presentation, RCA presenting new Gold and Platinum awards and award upgrades Elvis has earned since the last presentation in 1999. An event called Viva Tunica with the official Elvis Presley Fan Club of Great Britain, the Elvis My Happiness Fan Club of Paris, France, members of the Dutch It's Elvis Time Fan Club, the Flaming Star Elvis Presley Fan Club of Norway, and Elvis Today USA. Guided tours of Humes Junior High School, Elvis Memorabilia Room and Auditorium. That's Humes Junior High School, formerly L.C. Humes High School, Elvis's alma mater. Yes, he went to school. The Vaughn Bassett Furniture Company presents the Elvis Presley Collection. Come to Peabody Place during Elvis Week and see the furniture that everyone has been talking about. The collection consists of two Elvis-inspired styles of master bedroom suites. That's what everybody's talking about.
Elvis inspired this?
The Elvis Week fashion show. Professional models, thank God, and celebrities of the Elvis world, that's in quotes, strut out with the latest clothing and accessories from Graceland and the Elvis Presley Estate's licensing and merchandising divisions. Elvis Fan Night at Liberty Land. Fans can ride the rides, including Elvis's favorite, the Zippin' Pippin', and play games. Dance to a DJ playing Elvis music, play the Elvis game, sing Elvis karaoke, win Elvis prizes. A reception to kick off the Elvis Presley Memorial Trauma Center's 20th anniversary and honor fans. The Candlelight Vigil and Vigil Cast, of course. The Audubon Drive Pool Party at Elvis's former home. Tour the home and view Elvis artist Betty Harper's artwork. Yes, she's an Elvis artist. And then the Elvis, the 25th anniversary concert. That was Friday night. Elvis stars via video with his original bandmates live on stage. Man, that's a lot of clicks. And finally, on the schedule, just yesterday, Patrick Wren presents the 10th annual Elvis Presley Memorial Karate Tournament. He's owner of the Tennessee Karate Institute, where Elvis worked out when he was in town and alive. Still in town, by the way. And There were inductions into the Elvis Presley Memorial Karate Hall of Fame that will include recording and film celebrities who are also in the martial arts. Steve Seagal must be in that by now. What do you think? Anyway, that's what you missed by not being in Memphis this week. All to commemorate the 25th anniversary of the death of Elvis Presley, a death whose cause was reported in the first editions of the New York Times. This cause of death removed from all subsequent editions of the New York Times for reasons still unknown. But in that first edition, reporting the cause of death of the king of rock and roll as, quote, straining at stool, unquote.
so what's wrong with me? I've been riding this pole since 2:45. I used to be as frisky as a 20-pound pup. I know the committee. I'm all backed up. Paper cup. Well, look at me. I'm all backed up. I'm all backed up. I'm all backed up. Can eat my fill, but I can't get a grill, 'cause I'm all backed up.
On today's broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, did you miss your summer? Have you had your summer yet? Because, you know, the days dwindle down to a precious few. And while you and I might think that the end of summer is just, you know, means more back to school ads and of course, just a little more than a month away, the beginning of the Christmas campaign, there are those who have believed that it may have more dire consequences.
Welcome now to the Health File. Your host is Dr. Manfred Weitzner, internationally recognized radio doctor. Dr. Weitzner has also received White House citations for overtime parking. Now, Dr. Manfred Weitzner.
Thank you very much, Tom. Now no longer with the station, but still through the magic of old tape, my announcer and dear listener, accept, if you will, won't you please, my invitation to snuggle for the next few all-too-precious moments here with me in the utilitarian but sturdy folds of the Health File. Well, friend, it's happening again. An article in the current issue of the Atlantic Monthly magazine says, and I don't quote, that there's no good statistical evidence linking lowered blood cholesterol to a decrease in heart disease, and predictably the medical establishment has reacted with outrage and dismay. And doesn't it seem as if this whole play has been acted out before? And the problem, friend, seems always to be the same. We don't like to hear bad news. None of us do, even if in the long run it turns out to be the good news. It's like the old joke. So, dear listener, what are you to do when your doc advises you to change your diet to lessen the chance of heart disease? Well, it's a long-honored tradition here within the vaulted halls of the Health File that we never interfere with your relationship with your doc. But if you approach life taking large quantities of vitamin L daily, and that's love, friend, then whatever your doc tells you, even if it's that you're so-called terminal, that will be
the good news, and that's something we can all use more of in our diet.
You're listening to The Health File. Dr. Weitzner is also an attorney who has sued himself for malpractice and won. Once again, Dr. Weitzner.
Thanks again, Tom. And friend, even though here in Southern California there's plenty of hot weather left to come, meaning at least a number 15 sunscreen to avoid overdosing on vitamin S, and that's sunshine. In most of the rest of the country, the calendar and the climate agree that summer is over. Dr. Sherman Van Owen has been researching our old friend, the mind-body connection, as it relates to such things as weather-induced depression and wrong part of the calendar blues. He's director of temporal medical studies at Mount St. Helens of Sinai Hospital in Seattle, and a good friend of both myself and the embracing cardboard walls of The Health File. Welcome, Dr. Van Owen.
It's my pleasure, sir.
Well, proving that it's not just ladies of the evening for whom pleasure is also their business. Dr. Van Owen, is there such a thing as end-of-summer syndrome?
Well, there is indeed, Dr. Weitzner. Summertime has been, for most of us, a time when things loosen up a little.
Mm-hmm.
The kids are around, or they're at camp.
Yes.
You're on vacation. Routines are relaxed. Clothing is more informal.
More iced beverages are consumed, undoubtedly.
Common sense tells us so.
Good old vitamin CS.
Now, suddenly, expectations are raised. There's a sense that as the weather cools, we should be prepared to be more energetic, start new initiatives, rev it up, as it were, for the stretch drive to the holidays.
When we can let down again.
Or be under pressure to enjoy ourselves.
Ah.
But that's another syndrome. Anyway, anecdotal evidence has told us that many people were getting depressed over their perceived inability to live up to these heightened expectations that they have of themselves and of each other. Then we opened our walk-in clinic a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
and our clinical experience tends to reinforce what we believe in any case.
So what do we do, Dr. Van Owen? Refrain from putting the barbecue away for a few more weeks? Perhaps apply sunscreen even when we stay in?
Well,
in short, do we try to trick the body into perceiving a less sudden change from summer and its foolishness mm-hmm. to the brass tacks of fall?
Well, of course, as with, I'm sure you're familiar with these experiments, the rats mm-hmm. that are trained to expect daylight at midnight,
mm-hmm.
it is possible to use external cues to readjust our body clocks. Body calendars, the larger rhythms, we're not sure of that.
So you've never had leaves falling around rats in April?
We have not. But our work, and it's very preliminary, it basically consists of doing shows like this. Our work suggests that readjusting our expectations might be of more lasting value.
Acknowledging to ourselves, to that angry parent, or that cop, or that boss, or that Shirley MacLaine inside all of us, that it's okay if we don't immediately start accomplishing more the minute that it begins to cool off.
That's right. We've done some meditation exercises,
mm-hmm.
watching tapes of college football games while repeating certain phrases like, "It'll get done later," things like that, that have proved to have remarkable clinical effectiveness in combating the depression, the amotivational state that typifies end-of-summer syndrome, and for the women, tapes of some of the new fall hour-long dramas.
Anything diet, exercise, and such can do in terms of making the mind-body connection, shall we say, connect?
Well, actually, that sort of thing seems to be counterproductive with what we're facing here.
Uh-huh.
Our patients suffer from high enough expectations, expecting them to adhere to a regime, either of exercise or diet, just seems to put another boulder in front of the mouth of the cave.
Well, the shadows are lengthening here in the craggy confines of the Health File, indicating either that our time is almost up or that the Health File itself is starting to tip over. So before we close off this most interesting exploration of a medical phenomenon, which we'll all become more aware of as this program is rerun, let me ask you, Dr. Van Owen,
mm-hmm.
if it's not true that the surest cure for a seasonal malady like end-of-summer syndrome is our old friend vitamin T. Time.
Well, normally that would be true, but with Christmas and New Year's right around the corner, mm-hmm. we feel medical intervention, non-aggressive medical intervention, is necessary to keep some of these people from just sliding into true depression, which we know how to treat.
The lure of the unknown, then, is what keeps us on the frontiers of medicine, because if you're not busy learning, friend, you're busy forgetting. Thank you, Dr. Van Owen, for joining me, and dear listener, thank you for sharing your oh-so-valuable time with us as well. Next time, rice bran, the incredible bulk. Till then, remember, sickness is a way of not being healthy. Health is just a way of not being sick. Now it's time to say goodbye and take the long climb out of the health file. So long.
One thing you didn't miss, if you've been here since the beginning of the hour, is this particular edition of the show. But that's the end of this broadcast. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USAN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world, through the facilities of the American Forces Network on shortwave at WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer whenever you want it, wherever you are around the world, at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like Rupert not hacking his way to fortune. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Email address for this broadcast is lemail@interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.